Yeah, well,
if you really start to see that I'm number one.
There you go. Oh, well, that is good.
This morning we got up and probably Be'ezus Hashem tonight we'll go to sleep the same way that we do every that we have done and that we will do every other day of our lives. But if when we go to sleep tonight, it'll be in the same manner that we had projected that we were going to do so this morning. Then what a wasted may not be our fault, but what a blown opportunity that we had from what we experienced this afternoon. There's a boy learning in he's now a man. He's a man learning in the Beis Medrash in Or Sameach, and a lot of times when you go if you scope a yeshiva and you take a survey of where does everybody come from in the yeshiva, so more or less there's a general path that people follow that lands them in that yeshiva. But in places like Or Sameach or Ish HaTorah, so if you start following, hey, what landed you here? So you get a whole bunch of different stories. So from this guy, he's from L.A. Maybe knows Benny Smith. He's from L.A. And one Saturday morning, he was in a diner and hanging out with his friends. And he was looking out the window. And there he saw a religious family walking down the street. The kids were going ballistic. This one was screaming, pulling her hair, spilling ice cream all over the stroller. They're all going crazy. And and the wife, she was trying, I guess, to do the best they can, but it was clear that this was one of those cases that the man needed to don his cape and swoop in to save the day, as men always do. And we charge you with the future responsibility of always saving the day. And anyway, so this guy, he very calmly, he came in, took care of all the kids, cleaned up the mess, calmed down his wife, all in a single bound, with one eye closed and one arm tied behind his back. And it was really an amazing sight. And this guy's in the diner watching, and he says, and he's watching, he's like, whoa, that's really crazy. You know what would have happened in my house if we would have acted like that? My father would have cracked out the belt, boom, pfft. Everybody would have been slapped around. What are you doing screaming? What are you doing crying? Hit this one, smack that one, curse at that one. That's really crazy. I wonder why it is that guy. What's he all about? And as all these stories go, he's Orthodox Jewish. Let me find out about Orthodox Jewish. Winds up in Yerushalayim and learns in Or Sameach, and now learns in Kollel. Don't know if he has a wife and kids, but we'll. And we'll make it that way in the story, just so it ends nicely. He's got a wife and a whole bunch of kids, and they lived happily. And they live happily ever after. There's a story about a similar story about Dallas, the Dallas Jewish community. That Dallas wasn't always a bastion of Orthodox life, and I think Rabbi Rodin's the rabbi there, right? So Rabbi Rodin wrote in the Jewish Week. He wrote the story that one day. Might have been the late 70s, if I remember right. It might not be. That one day a guy, a secular Jew, walked into the what then was the shul and put down, Rerud, and never saw him before in his life, put down a $10,000 check and said, I want to help build the Jewish community of Dallas. So Rerud was like, well, what's going on? Who are you? I don't even know anything about you. So he said that once he just came back from one of these missions to Israel, and he was standing at the Wailing Wall, not in the plaza, but in that part where everybody hangs over and watches, and he keyed in on one Hasidic guy with the long curly locks and the big coat and the burning sun, and he was watching him pray, and he said, I might never in my life pray like that. But I want to help build institutions where people will pray like that and will teach others how to pray like that. And this $10,000 is just the beginning. I'm going to give a massive donation so we could build up the Orthodox Jewish community. Now, in both these stories, the hero has no idea, the hero has no idea that anybody was watching him. The father was just doing his fatherly thing. The chassid, who knows, maybe he had somebody sick in his family that he was davening for. And you know, he didn't put on a show, oh yeah, maybe this guy watching me daven. You know, he doesn't know. Doing what we had to do, yet the positive ramifications for those kinds of actions are huge. Rabbi Rudin even writes at the end of that little piece, he says, so meanwhile this chassid is gonna go to Shemayim. He's going to drop dead. He's going to go to Shemayim, and Hashem is like, oh, Mr. Chassid, come. Let's show him what's behind door number one, his chalik in Gan Eden. And they go and they show him, and it's like this massive, like top rate chalik in Olam Haba. And he says, listen, God, I know you're God, and I know that you know everything, but are you sure this is really for me? I mean, I did good stuff. I was a chassid. I did good stuff. But I mean, this is beyond anything I ever imagined. And Hashem will look at him and be like, of course this is yours. Dallas. You're Dallas. And the chassid is going to look at him and be like, what the heck is Dallas? He doesn't even know there's such a place in America like that. But even if we're unwittingly doing something positive, Dallas is a real place, by the way, and Aryeh Zucker came from there. That even though it was unwitting, but if we have, because of our actions, if we have a positive influence on something, so then we'll rack up the points for everything that comes out of that experience. So in last week's parsha, we read Ve'ela Toldos Yitzchak Ben Avraham, Avraham Holides Yitzchak. These are the children of Yitzchak Ben Avraham, Yitzchak the son of Avraham, Avraham. Holidus Yitzchak, Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. And all the Mepharshim asked, wait a second, once you told me that it was Yitzchak ben Avram, once you told me that it was Yitzchak the son of Avram, don't I already know, obviously, Avram, Holidus Yitzchak? Obviously, Avram gave birth to Yitzchak? So Rashi over there says, what's Rashi say? Right? Excellent, everybody. Right? Rashi says that all the Leitzanei Hador looked and said, whoa, doesn't make sense. You know, Avram lived with Sarah for so many years and nothing happened. And then one night, she's like, something's going on there with Avimelech. And then all of a sudden she has a kid. You know what? There's probably a good chance that this child is not Avram's. So God, Hashem said, you know what? Yes, it's Yitzchak ben Avram. And to prove it to you, Avram holidus Yitzchak, and to prove it to you, Hashem made Yitzchak look exactly like Avram. So nobody had any questions about who was the father. But the Kli Yakar asked, if that's true, if that's the reason why the Torah repeats, so then why didn't the Torah just say, Eila told us Yitzchak ben Avram, or Eila told us Yitzchak who Avram gave birth to, and Avram holid is Yitzchak. Why change the son terminology from ben to holid, or from holid to ben? Why not stay consistent with the same word? Every day, in fact, when I learned Daf Yomi, that I think about, imagine what kind of schar Rev Meir Shapiro gets for starting Daf Yomi. Nobody here could say they don't know somebody learning Daf Yomi, because I learned Daf Yomi, and probably if you think back to the place where you come from, there are probably tons of people who learned Daf Yomi. And if you tally up the billions of Daf of Gemara that are being learned because he had an idea called Daf Yomi, it'll be amazing. Can you imagine what kind of chelik in Olam Haba he's going to get? So my grandfather, I'm not sure if this part of the story is true or not, but my grandfather, Alav HaShalom, claimed that he was there at the big gathering of all the Gedolei Hador when Rabbi Shapiro was going to introduce the idea of Daf Yomi. Now, in the previous, before he came up with such a thing, so imagine that all yeshivas were Ian. It was Ian all day. And maybe a little bit Bikias, but the general focus of yeshivish learning was all in depth in Be'iyah. And now here comes some young guy, big Talmud Chacham, but he was young, and he wants to change, because the real Daf Yomi, by the way, real Daf Yomi is you learn a Daf yomi. You spend your entire day, like 18 hours, learning one page of Gemara. So he wanted to radically change learning, and his yeshiva is what they did: learn one page of Gemara, three siddurim a day, and then go through a whole masechta. And he was afraid. He said, "They're going to laugh me out of the building." So my grandfather said he was standing right there when the Chavetz Chaim said to him. The Chavetz Chaim obviously was the Gadol Hadar at the time. Chavetz Chaim said, "Listen, you just come in. I'll take care of the rest." And when Rabbi Shapiro came in, when he walked into the huge, you know, hundreds of people, hundreds of gedolim and rabbanim meeting into the Aguda convention over there, when he walked in, so the Chavetz Chaim stood up. And once the Chavetz Chaim stood up, so then you can imagine the entire place stood up. Whoa, who's this guy? Chavetz Chaim standing up for him, and the rest is history. But can you imagine the Olam Haba that he's getting now? Because, you know, Art Scroll came out with these Gemaras that makes we should know how to read regular Gemara also, but Art Scroll came out with these Gemaras now that makes Gemara learning so accessible. And can you imagine how much Torah all these people are responsible for, and what kind of Chelek and Gan Eden they're going to get? So the Kli Yakar said that's the pshat in Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham Holidus Yitzchak. Because you have a biological relationship between father and son, and nothing could ever change that. But besides the children, besides the fact that we're children to parents, and besides the fact that, God willing, one day you'll have your own children, but there are other things that we are creating in the world besides just biological children. And the actions that we leave into this world, those are toldos. For example, Eila toldos Noach. These are the toldos. These are the children of Noach. Noach ish tzadik tamim haya bedorosav. Rashi over there says, Iker toldos of tzadikim are their masayim. The major contribution, the major quote unquote children of tzadikim are the actions that they leave this world in. The impact that we have on this world, that is also our child. Whether it's positive, a good child, or negative, but they're all our responsibility, they're all our children. So when the Pasuk says, Yitzchak ben Avram, that's talking about biologically. Yitzchak was the son of Avram. But Avram holidus Yitzchak, because when Yitzchak watched the way that Avram lived his life, so then he chose then that impact, that he was also his child in behavior. That impact on him helped Yitzchak decide, or had Yitzchak decide, how he was going to live his life. So it was Avram holidus Yitzchak. Avram gave birth to the person that Yitzchak would become and be defined as. Can you imagine what kind of schar Rabbi Fass is going to get in Olam Haba? Because he had an idea of let's bring Jews to Israel and let's do nefesh b'nefesh. And can you imagine like all the schar of all the people that have now come on Aliyah that's going to be on his cheshbon for positive? But it also unfortunately doesn't work only for positive. One of the strongest experiences that I ever had in my life was that I probably told some of you the story already. Is that when I used to, back in the day before there was that destructive co-ed football league. So back in the time when I used to play in the league, when obviously it was then much better. And we were really good. We made top tier of the playoffs. We were sponsored by Dougie's New York. It was great all around. I remember in the last we had to win the last game in order to make the playoffs. And you know, I got the call for the 80-yard bomb, less than a minute to play. And I dropped the pass, but you know, I flopped on purpose, and they called pass interference, and we got the ball on the one, and the next play I caught the winning touchdown. We went to the top tier, and then we got cheated out of a win by the commissioner. But okay, you know, that's for a different night. But on the way back from that game, so we're all on a high. We just won the last game of the season. We're going top tier of the playoffs, And we're on the bus. We're going. At the time, I was learning in Bayit Began, and I was taking the bus back from town towards Bayit Began. It's a long bus ride. So the way that buses are structured in Israel is you have seats in the front and seats in the back. And Baruch Hashem, a lot of children in this country. So in the middle of the bus, there's an open section where people are supposed to put strollers. But when the bus is super crowded, so then everybody stands in the middle. Everybody stands in the middle also. So on that day, I was sitting in the back with. with a teammate and a colleague, let's call him. I was sitting on the back. We were also, he's an hour Rebbe in a different yeshiva. And we were sitting, whatever, talking. Of course, we were talking Torah in the back. And many seminary girls, Beit Vagan has a lot of seminaries, so many seminary girls started getting on the bus. Now, what I'm about to say, this story is not a rank on girls. I could sit and rank on what guys do, you know, probably much longer than what I could do about, all right, maybe not longer, but I could rank on guys plenty. But this particular incident, this is just local to, this is a girl story. Anyway, so the girls get on the bus, and we know as the song goes, so the girls get on the bus, they're like, oh my gosh, I haven't seen you. It's like a chicken coop. I haven't seen you in 9 seconds. Oh my God. Oh my gosh, it's so amazing. Oh, you know, anyway, and it's like really, it's very, there's a lot of shrilling going on the bus, if I can make up a word like that. Anyway. So the way that it was so there was a bunch of girls in the middle, and in the first seat after that middle section was a chiloni elderly lady, and then there were girls behind her also, and it was very visible. She was getting very annoyed at all the noise, and at one point they even started having a conversation over her. They were talking over her to speak to the girls behind. In the seats behind. And she says, at one point, you know, she maxed out, and she says, do you mind, would it be okay if you stopped doing that? And the girl said, it's a public bus, I could do whatever I want. And it went on, and it continued, and at the next stop, around Shari Tzedek, by the Yad Sarah building, so the woman storms off the bus. And I said to myself at that point, wow, I just destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. Because we know the story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, but the reason why the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed was because the host of the party threw Bar Kamsa out of the party, and Bar Kamsa said, if all the rabbis were sitting there and nobody stopped what was happening, so then it must be that they agreed with what was going on, I'm going to go get them, I'm going to go destroy the Beis HaMikdash, and then that story happens. So here I was watching this whole scene. I just told it to you pretty vividly. I watched what happened. I saw the whole thing happen, and I could have stopped it. And instead, for whatever reason, because that's what we do sometimes, so I stayed sitting. I didn't do anything. And because of that, so now this woman, this Chiloni woman, whereas, listen, she would have been upset. She would have been upset no matter what. But I could have, at least, if I would have stepped in, a rabbinic student, if I would have stepped in, and I would have said, listen, you know, let's just cut her some slack. You know, it's, you know, let's just wait 2 seconds and then we could, you know, we'll continue. If I would have stepped in, at least she could have walked home and told her kids, you know what, the Orthodox, yeah, they were annoying, but at least there were some of them that had some respect for their elders. But I didn't. Which means, and I don't think I'm so crazy, which means that she probably went home and she probably said to her children, now listen to what happened on the bus. And this is why I hate those dati. This is why I hate those. They're sitting there learning all that Torah in their school and they don't even have common decency to respect elders on a bus. And everybody was there. All the rabbinical students were there and they did it. And they didn't stop it either. I hate them. And you should grow up hating them also. Every Yom Kippur, When I try to do tshuva, so I'm not sure I can even do tshuva for such a sin because I don't even know how bad the snowball got. And when you don't know how bad a snowball is, so then how do you ever do tshuva for that? Now, I'm not a bad person. I know that there's plenty of stuff that I've done in my lifetime that has positive snowballs. But at the same time, there are lots of children. There are lots of toldos that I'm making in the world. There are toldos that I'm making in the world that are positive, and there are also toldos that I'm responsible for in the world because I didn't step up and do something when I could have. There are a number of stories that they told today about the Holzbergs. First of all, part that we missed that I just read on the internet before I came, her father, Ray Rosenberg, her father said that they didn't kill two people, they killed three people. She was 5 months pregnant. If you want to understand what that means, they had this family who dedicated themselves. We've heard and read all the stories about how they opened their home to anybody, Jew or non-Jew, especially people who were having drug issues. If they needed a meal, one story they told today was he was in shul and a non-from Israeli came over to him and said, here, there's this couple over here, they need a meal. They also need a meal Friday night, so could we bring them along? And without missing a beat, he's like, sure. Of course you could. Of course you could bring them. Remote told the story today about the 120 people who showed up, and he went out to buy chickens and shechted them and prepared 120 chickens and rolls on the spot for those people. So these are people who dedicated themselves. One story they told today was they asked the Sandra Samuel, the nanny who saved the kid, they asked her before they left Mumbai, where does Rivka and Gavi keep their personal effects? Like, where are the pictures of all the years of things that they've done? Where's the jewelry? Where's the silver? Where's the cameras? And she looked at them and said, what are you talking about? Gavi and Rivka? They don't have anything personal. Everything was klal. Everything was tzibur. They did nothing for themselves. So that's the kinds of people that we're talking about. And they, for whatever reason, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided they had two children with Tesaks. One of them was Nifter, and they're buried now next to him in Har Abayis, in Har Zesim. And one of them is in an institution in Eretz Yisrael. And then they had this Moshe who everybody was talking about all day, a two-year-old, who if you go on Haaretz.com, they have a video of him this morning, or yesterday morning in Mumbai, when they were having a ceremony in the shul, and he's screaming, Ima, Ima, and being held by an Indian. Because nobody's ever going to answer that tefillah. And the story about him going to the jail and bringing somebody, I'm not sure what in Israeli, I think the story was in India, what he was doing in jail in India, maybe he was in jail here. The guy brought, the non-religious guy, he brought him food and drink and jokes multiple times a week. And the guy's like, well, this is what Jews are all about, so I'm going to go be from, forget about it. This is what I have to, you know, it's obvious that this is the way, so this is the proper way to live life. And the joy that the rabbi said, the rabbi from New York, the joy that he heard in Gavi's voice when they called him and said that Moshe was healthy. And God granted us a healthy baby, and now she's pregnant again. And for people who gave up of themselves for the tzibur to be able to have the joy of possibly having another healthy child, and that is, you know, and that is all snuffed out. They affected who knows how many. They made who knows how many children in this world by their actions. And when we woke up this morning, and whatever design we had about our life and what we wanted to do with ourselves, and this was my plan for yeshiva, and this is what I was going to learn, and maybe I would go home, and then I would go to college, and this, and whatever our plan was, so if we missed the message of being really great and being really big and contributing children, quote unquote, children to this world by the actions that we're doing, and we're not going to sleep with a different kind of plan, so then maybe we missed a little bit of what today was all about. They asked today, what do you answer? Shimon Peres asked, what do you answer the two-year-old about why his mother was killed when he was two and he's not going to have her the rest of his life? And the Rabbanim said, we don't answer. There is no answer. There is no answer to that question about why. But what we can do is, you know, I'm not going to say that the why, that their sacrifice, their why was so that we could have an experience today that would then question ourselves about what my plan for the year is and what my plan for my life is. And is that plan just what I want to do, or is that plan about being really big and about being really great and about being contributing to the world? I'm not going to say that's the reason, but what we should have walked out of this whole experience is that, hey, is my life plan, is that too short-sighted? Do I need to maybe do something that's really huge? Do I need to do something in this world that's contributing, that's going to be really big? And it might be it might not be in line with what I thought I should be doing up to this point, but that's okay because that plan should change almost every day of your life. When you learn how great we could be. It's hard to define what we need to do in order to be great, but it's easy to define what it is that we're doing that's not going to have anything to do with our greatness. Staying in bed will not be contributing to anything with greatness. Watching DVDs, okay, you know, I would hear a little bit of an argument if you watch Dead Poets Society or Patch Adams, and you know, and you need that a little bit to inspire, you know, not because you did a marathon and spent your whole night, the whole night and every day of your life watching DVDs, you know, just to, oh, maybe I'll get that one movie that'll have like 1 second of inspiration. No, I hear it a little bit. But sitting and watching multiple DVDs or, you know, scamming behind the yeshiva's back, you know, maybe we should turn this off, but scamming behind the yeshiva's back, you know, laptops that we have in the dorms, you know, just so that we could watch it. And listen, and Facebook, it's an excellent tool to do a lot of good things. But do we abuse that and spend so much time on that is going to cheat our ability to really be great? You know, do I spend so much time watching the stats of my fantasy basketball league that's going to change in 24 hours? The whole thing is going to change anyway. So do I invest so much futile time in something that at the end of the day might not really be relevant at all, at the expense of doing something that could be really contributing, that could be really... I would love somebody to come and tell me a real story of somebody who spent all that time fantasy basketball or football, and that was massive in contribution to the world. What are we doing with ourselves? And even if it's hard to learn, and even if it's hard to daven, but... And therefore, I decide that in Seder, I can't really learn the Gemara now. Or you know, I'm bouncing off the walls. I can't really. So what do I do at that time? Do I walk outside to that little death trap over there that's between the Beis Medrash and the office, and I sit there by the soda machine and hang out with my friends with the little, you know, with the phone games and the this, you know, and I'm just sitting there. Is that any contribution to the world? Or should I pick myself up, go get a different book from the shelf, or crack out at the Tehillim and say, you know, at least daven for somebody, or go up and help Rabbi Berman, or am I doing something at least that's productive? So that's building, that's making positive toldos in the world. It's incredible. We don't see it yet for sure, but it's incredible how much greatness is sitting right next to you right now that we might not even realize yet. But it comes time to maybe look at ourselves and check, what am I doing with my time? Am I building into something that's going to be really great? And sometimes instead of looking at the guy next to me, sometimes I also need to look at myself. Look inside myself and ask, what am I doing and what are my plans and what are my priorities? And you know, and do I have these experiences that just like roll off my back and then nothing ever changes? Or is this going to be the first day in my life when I experience something so real that I will make sure that it has impact on something that I do? And maybe before you get out of here, you know, we have a lot to do. You know, it's only 8:00, so even if you're playing ball tonight, maybe you could even do something productive right now for even a few minutes. But before you walk out of here, at least stop and think, what's one thing that I'm going to change because I learned something really, really so great from the Holzbergs? And that'll be their Ner Olam. That'll be their Zichron forever. That'll be their monument, and that'll be our contribution to Klal Yisrael. He wrote some of Nevinu Shabashmam that Hashem should help us realize how great we could be so that we can make this world, for Jews and non-Jews alike, that we can make this world a much better place.